Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the SyrupCast, Mobile Syrup's Canadian tech-focused podcast. I'm Patrick O'Rourke and Brad Bennett, a man who refers to himself as the bad boy of tech, but that currently looks like 4 pixels on my screen. He's across the internet. His internet's not working very well today, though. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm good. I'm tired. Most listeners won't know that this is like the earliest SyrupCast we've ever recorded, which isn't really that early, but I'm going to complain about it nonetheless. And I'm going to blame that on my internet issues today. So my internet's usually not up and running until, you know, about 10:30. And so we're going to see what happens today.
Your internet needs its coffee this morning.
Yeah, the hamsters need to start, you know, getting their legs stretched and run. Like, we only keep 2 of them on the wheels overnight, and it's just not enough power to keep the 150 megabytes running smoothly.
This is, I think, at least as long as I have been on the SyrupCast, the earliest episode that I can think of, though, for sure. That's a real fact.
There's no way we would have ever done it earlier than this before the time that I've been on it, because like you would have had to go into the office. It's like, you're not going to the office to record this early.
We did do like a 10 a.m. one at some point, I remember. But yeah, this is not the SyrupCast history episode.
Oh.
John, you're also on the podcast this week. You've been sitting there quietly waiting. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm also tired, but not as tired as you guys because I got up early and I've had my coffee. So I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
I'm working. It's a nice morning. I'm halfway through my coffee.
It's way too hot still.
Ugh. I haven't went outside yet. I wore a festive shirt, though.
Don't. Stay inside.
Yeah.
Where it's cold. It's safe.
When I was on vacation, I came home and the Nest Home and Away feature had accidentally turned on. So I wasn't home, obviously, so my air conditioning wasn't running, period. And it was 30 degrees in my house when I walked in the house.
Oh, my God.
So I turned that off. That's never going to happen again.
There's no way to like set it and be like, hey, when you recognize I'm away and it's summertime, like, you know, maybe keep it at like 25 so we can at least pump it like lower quickly, or
probably. I just turned it off entirely because I want it to be like somewhat cool for my cat, right? So
yeah,
there's probably like some sort of cool temperature cats limitation you can put in place where it like doesn't go above 25 or 24 or something like that. Yeah. But I just turned it off. It's easier that way.
You want to hear a sad smart thermostat story before we kick off this podcast?
I do. I love smart thermostat stories.
So the start of the story. Actually, the sad... I could end it right after this, but I rent, period. Sad smart home story. No, but the thermostat in my apartment is a smart home thermostat. It's the Honeywell Round or something like that, I believe it's called. But it's three sort of renter generations old. And 3 renter generations ago, somebody set it up, logged in, made an account, and has been in that account ever since. And so I have no idea how to connect it to my Wi-Fi or any of the smart features or anything. So it is a smart thermostat that I must treat like a dumb thermostat. And
you can reset it.
No, I did. And it's
locked
down. Did you?
It's still in? Yeah. Really? Okay.
Maybe I can. What were you going to say? Maybe I didn't do all the way.
There's a thermostat like that in the condo that I had when I lived in Etobicoke.
Yeah.
And I reset it. Like, it was hooked up to somebody else's smart features, and then I was able to like just set it up factory defaults again.
Yeah, no, I factory defaulted it the start of this summer when my landlord like came over and was like, hey, we need to turn the air conditioning on, blah blah blah. And we had like a hell of a time trying to get it working just because it was under this different name, and like it was set to only mode or something. I don't know, it took us forever. We factory reset it, we finally got it out to cold mode and didn't get cold mode again, but we never got that other dude's name off of it. So I wish I could just shout out my address and be like, hey, if you lived here, give me the thermostat password. If you lived in Cabbage Town and you had a Round, Cabbage Town, Toronto, and you had a Honeywell Round thermostat, you left it. reach out to me online at the Brad Fat. Give me that password, please. Thank you very much. Let's start this podcast off. That's all I got.
Yeah. So we're done with chatting about service stats. That was a good intro to the show. Before we get into like the actual bulk of the episode, this is a little bit different for us. We're doing a themed episode. There's not really any tech news happening. We know September is going to be really busy. So what we decided to do this week is to take a look back at a couple of the devices we've either reviewed or written about earlier in the year and how those products have fared over the past like roughly 6 months or so and whether or not our opinions have changed. But before we get into that, Bennett, hit us with the hottest news of the week.
Whenever I sing it so I can edit it, because when I do the video, I can like edit the soundtrack on top of that. I never listen to the full audio version the audio editor does. Do they just edit out my singing, or do they edit it out? Brutal. Well, I hope they can find a way to get that in there. Anyway, so hottest news of the week. Let's start off. Basically, our newest employee, or no, I guess, should I mention that we have someone new starting today? Is that even worth mentioning? I guess I've kind of put the cat out of the bag now.
Sure. I think you've already mentioned it.
Yeah, sorry. Our second newest employee, Karan, wrote an article. He took some really great photos for it. Was going to get to that. But we also have a new starting today. Her name is Alyssa, and she'll be filling our telecom reporter role that was previously filled by Aisha Malik, Shruti Shakur before her, Samir Chabra before her, Rose Bahar before him. And I don't know how far down the line it goes for those people. But we have a new telecom reporter. We're pretty excited about it. It's a big niche for Mobile Syrup. I'm sure as a listener, you understand it. You're probably excited for more telecom news coming your way. And hopefully that's cool. But anyway, back to the hottest news of the week. Our now second newest employee, Karandeep Oberoi. We call him Karan though. He put a new review up of the SteelSeries Aerox 3 Wireless. He's just been getting started with us, but I think he took some really great photos in this one. And the review is pretty cool too. So if you're looking for a new gaming mouse, this could be one to check out.
Anyway, what I thought was interesting.
Sorry,
I was just going to say what I thought was interesting about the mouse, and this is someone who doesn't play any PC games, right? So I'm coming from a totally different world, is the fact that it's like air flows through it. You know what I mean? Like it's hollow.
Yeah,
it's
like got a honeycomb.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the times really common, John. Now. John, I know you've written a couple stories about the mice like that in the past, but this was like, other than that, one of the first times I didn't know that existed, I guess is what I'm saying.
Not to one up Karan, but I've got a mouse review coming soon that's a similar design, but they've taken it to the next level and put a fan inside the mouse.
Oh my god,
keep your hand cold.
For you keeping your hand cool. Okay, so yeah. I thought the honey. Okay, now we're actually gonna talk about this gaming mouse situation. I thought the honeycomb design was just for like maximum structural stability and minimum weight.
No,
but you're telling me now it's sort of like a hand cooling situation.
So I think you are right. I think the honeycomb design was all about reducing weight while still like maintaining integrity and also to get that excellent RGB gamer.
Oh, that color LED flow. Yeah, all right. You know? Yeah, I got you.
Because the mouse just lights up. It's really nice. Yeah. But no, this mouse that I'm going to be reviewing, they literally just took it to the next level and said, okay, we're going to do the honeycomb design and we're going to put a fan in it to blow air through
That's
the holes.
Cool.
You know what they like should that. Do? They should put a fan, but not blowing up, but you blowing down. So you get sort of like an air hockey table effect.
Ooh.
Where you kind of like glide really cool. your hand over the table. Yeah. All right. I'm out. It's been a long time since I came up with an idea for a product lab on the Mobile Syrup Show, but I'm out. John and I used
Your
to
Kickstarter's
do that
coming soon.
Yeah. We used to come up with crazy ideas. What was the thing we had? It was like it's almost like a peanut thing, but it was giving us, anyway. Yeah. So that mouse was pretty crazy. I guess John's got another review coming up, and we should actually have some more gaming coverage, I think, coming up in the future, because we're sort of launching another part of the website called Syrup Arcade soon as well, which you'll see. And
yeah, it'll be the start of something much bigger. But yeah, you'll see that on the site somewhat soon.
Will it not be live by the time?
Yeah, it should be live. If all goes according to plan, it should be live by the time this episode releases on Friday.
Yep.
Fingers crossed. Don't know how it's going to work out, but if all goes according to plan, it should be out by then.
Yeah, and it won't be a huge change. I don't think anything from the start. I don't think anyone needs to be afraid or too excited, but some more gaming content should follow, and that should be fun. I know we have some writers that are pretty excited about it. And then just back to the news. This less news, but still something worth checking out. Our back-to-school gift guide is up. We've got some cool stuff in there, you know, Galaxy Z Flip 3, which we won't talk about too much. I put like a fun little multi-tool on there, which is hard to tell in the image, but I put it on there specifically because it's very tiny, which I thought was very cool. What else? We got this pillow pad thing, which is an as seen on TV thing, but I know a guy with one and he lives for it. He uses it every single night. You just put it like lives in your bed, and you just like put it up on your knees as you're like laying in bed, and then you put your like laptop on it on an angle or your iPad or something.
Ooh, I want that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like $30. It's a pillow. Like it's soft. It's meant to be used like in bed.
That sounds cool.
And he literally falls asleep with it like on his lap all the time. Yeah. And some other stuff in there, you know, some back to school stuff, some more university level dorm stuff, some younger stuff, but I don't know. It's tough to like nail that back to school arc. Anyway, moving on to real news. Montreal is investing in an electrification strategy with sort of more micro transit, which is bringing like 2,000 and some electric bikes, some electric taxis, and more charging stations to the cities.
I wish that was happening in Toronto. Toronto said yeah. No to several scooter companies. Not that we commute to an office currently, but someday that'll happen to some extent.
There was a small pilot, but I don't think they ever really went anywhere with it. Or are we still in that pilot zone?
They apply. I don't want to. Bird, I believe, applied for a second pilot with the city, and they were denied.
Okay.
The first pilot was just in the distillery district.
Yeah.
I remember writing something about Lime scooters in Toronto, but I don't remember what the details were. It was a while ago now.
Well, there was this, there was like a year long period where there was one Lime scooter located in Toronto, and it would like move around sometimes. And I used to track it just to see where it was and where it was going. And I still have no idea what that was about. Like whether someone like threw a Lime scooter in the back of a pickup truck and like drove from somewhere where they have them and just like started using it here. I have no clue to this day. I have no idea what that was about.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm assuming my guess would be a test, but the electrification strategy for Montreal seems to be more towards electric bikes, which maybe we could get here. You know, like there's so many, I believe they're called city bikes in Montreal, but what are they, like bike TO or something here? You know, there's all those bikes in the different stands. Like, I mean, it would be a huge undertaking, a lot of money, and a lot of those bikes, to my knowledge, still seem to be in like really decent shape every time I use them, like, you know, good enough for what they are. But you know, maybe someday Toronto will replace those with e-bikes. I don't know if we'll ever get scooters, but maybe we could get e-bikes. And I mean, that's somewhat of the way there.
A mix of like regular bikes and e-bikes would probably be the best solution. Just like a couple of them. I know there's a lot of controversy surrounding electrified, like last mile transportation because bike lanes are already such a, like a, there's not enough of them in the city already. Right. So having to share those with,
Haven't been down here. You haven't been down here for a while, but since COVID started, they've added in like a...
Oh, have they? Okay.
At least on my edge. I'm on the east edge of downtown. So on the east edge of downtown, like they've definitely cut some roads down to one ways. There's more bike lanes. And I see people with scooters they own in the bike lanes more than the sidewalks now than I used to. So like, I feel like if Toronto honestly gave it like a better, more detailed look post-COVID, I think the city is now more ready or better prepared, perhaps being the more accurate term, for electric scooters. If they'll reconsider would be a whole different thing. And I don't think so. But anyway, good on you, Montreal. I went there once. The electric scooters are sick. They have them in Ottawa too. Really fun. But Toronto, not so much.
I was in Montreal this weekend. I didn't see any electric scooters. Surprisingly.
No, when I was there for the Pokemon Go thing, they were all over. But they were like really new at that point. So maybe
I wasn't like downtown, I guess.
Yeah. Fair enough. But yeah, I don't know. Electric scooters are fun. We haven't reviewed one in a while. I guess we can't really without an office like go to. It's not as convenient, but maybe someday again. But yeah, that's Montreal. Electric taxis, electrification is coming. So this is another one. This is the fun one I kind of wrote yesterday. And this more leads into like a bigger conversation. But essentially, Google Maps is getting a feature that's going to tell you like a sort of average price of how much a toll road might cost if you were to drive through one on your route. The interesting thing with that is that's actually a Waze feature. As with almost every new Google Maps feature that has come out in the last 3 years. And I just think the interesting part of this conversation is that like Google bought Waze 3-4 years ago, maybe. I don't know. Google bought Waze a long time
ago. More than that, I think, at this
point. Yeah, it's a long time. And at the time, it was like, no, we're going to have Waze. We're going to run it as a separate business, blah, 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 which they've done. But they've basically taken almost every feature from Waze and added it to Google Maps. Not everyone, but a lot of the big ones, you know, like, what's that one? So you can like drop a pin, like there's a speed trap or there's construction ahead.
The traffic data is also pulled from Waze and fed into Google Maps, to my understanding as well. That was, I think, at least initially a big reason why Google purchased Waze.
Yeah. But it's just like, I don't know, I guess it just makes me think about like Fitbit. Like, do you think, so what, we got like 4 years left of Fitbit and then Google's just sort of incorporating it into their own products?
Well, I mean, Waze still exists, right? Like to Google's credit, they kept it around when that acquisition happened. I think it was 5+ years ago at this point. I honestly didn't expect that. I really thought that they were just going to gobble it up and it was going to disappear in a couple of years. I still use Waze all the time. Probably not really every single time I drive, but like I used it this weekend in Montreal. I used it to drive to my parents' house when I was on vacation. I like the community aspects of Waze. And I used it long before the acquisition too. So some of that's just me continuing to use the same app again. But I do appreciate that Google kept it around despite like what you're saying, where it really doesn't need to be around anymore. You could just use Google Maps.
I think Waze also has a lot of value for Google in that it's almost like a testing playground where like if Google wants to put a feature in Google Maps, they can put it on Waze first, see how it does, see how people like it with like a smaller group before bringing it to Google Maps, which is a much, much wider audience.
Very true.
Which is, I don't know, the Google product I always like to go to with stuff like this is Inbox, because Inbox was kind of that idea for Gmail. They had all these cool new experimental features in Inbox that people could try and people really liked. And then they could like bring those features over to Gmail based on how the reception was on Inbox. But then Google was like, well, screw Inbox and all the people who love it. They can suffer. We're going to shut it down.
And they didn't do that with Waze, which I'm still like every couple of days, I like, not every couple of days, but every couple of months I think about it and I'm like, I think it's coming. Like, I think they're going to kill it off at some point.
Same. No, I mean, that's kind of where I was hoping this conversation would lead. And it's like, I totally, like, how long do we think Waze has left? You think forever? I don't know. I'm giving it a year, 2 years. I'll give it 2.
I think forever at this point. It's been too long. It's not worth them killing it. There's a pretty dedicated community that would be really, really, like, I know that this has happened before, but I think it's a much, much larger community that Waze has worldwide that would be really pissed off if they were to just kill it off.
Actually, yeah, I would be interested to see how many people use Waze worldwide and also like how many new users have started using Waze over the past few years. Like, is it still gaining new users now that Google Maps has a similar feature? So I think it's
130 million monthly active users worldwide.
Is this a recent statistic, last 3 years or so?
As of 2019.
All right, I'll take it.
Okay, 2020, 140 million.
Wow. All right,
that's like a massive number, right?
Yeah, but not a lot of growth, but a little bit. Right? You said 120 and 140?
Yeah, well, 140 as of 2020.
Right, I mean, it's probably nothing compared to Google Maps, which has, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Probably billions. In the billions of users. Yeah. But it's definitely something.
Fair enough. And then just the last thing, this just came out yesterday, but the Korean Herald is reporting that the Galaxy Z Fold 3 and the Z Flip 3 have accounted for more than 450,000 pre-orders, which might not seem like a lot compared to an iPhone, but compared to the previous Fold and Flips is like quadruple, if not more. Yeah, probably like 5 times the amount. Maybe even more. So pretty exciting. And it goes to show that people look to be buying the Flip and Fold 3. I don't want to talk about them too much because we just basically spent like 2 podcasts talking about them. Yeah. But we had theories that people were going to buy them, especially the Flip this year with its lower price. And with the pre-order numbers that are being reported on, which, you know, we're assuming are accurate. It's not directly from Samsung, but what we're assuming is accurate. It seems like that's the case, which is exciting. Anyway, I think that's sort of it for the news.
Yeah, all I was going to say about that is for the first time, I actually see or have, like, my friends have asked me about it, like the Flip 3 in particular, because they're seeing the slightly lower price point. They've asked me, like, is it a good phone? How does this even work? I saw this before. It seemed like an experiment. Is this something I could buy now? And that's to me always like, because my friend, some of the people that I've grown up with, they don't follow tech at all. So when they start paying attention to something, I in some ways see that as like a litmus test for like mass consumption to some level, right?
Yeah, the other day I caught Alex like pricing them out on her website, on the website on her laptop. So people seem into it.
Nice. Yeah, so let's get into the bulk of the show. I'll kick things off. I think the way we're going to do this is we'll each talk about one device, and then you guys will ask me a couple questions about it. So the first one that I wanted to bring up was the Xbox Series X. I reviewed that from Mobile Syrup back in, I believe it was November when it released. The one thing I would say is that whatever next-gen console you're trying to buy, it's really, really hard to get your hands on one. I think it's a little easier to get an Xbox Series X, but you still have to be like basically living on the internet and like watching for restocks to happen. Yeah. My brother is actually trying to buy one right now, and he's been trying for about a month or so and hasn't even come close to getting one. There hasn't been a single restock that he's been able to jump on. So it is still extremely difficult to get them. That said, I really liked the console when it came out. There was a few things that stood out to me. One was the super fast multitasking, the ability to jump from like game to game, coupled with Game Pass. The fact that you can just like try out a game for this relatively low monthly fee sort of has changed the way that I play video games. I'll take more chances on stuff that like I normally would never play because I don't want to drop the cash on it. A good example of that is Yakuza Like a Dragon. It's like a weird Japanese RPG game that I never would have even considered buying at any point in my entire life. But because I think it's on Game Pass now. It wasn't at launch. I believe it's on Game Pass now.
I can do a little search. You keep talking.
I was able to like check it out, right? I sometimes get confused because we get all kinds of codes. I think I got a code for it when it first came out, and I believe it's on Game Pass now. I'm pretty sure. But yeah, that's one of the factors. But yeah, there are some things. Confirmed. It is. Okay, cool.
Yep.
Glad I don't sound like an idiot.
Not this time.
There are certain things about the console that haven't changed, though, right? One of the big criticisms of both the Series X, the Series S, and the PlayStation 5 is there's not a ton of like really worthwhile exclusives. I think the PS5 does have some now, like Ratchet and Clank's a good example. There's a couple other games.
Right. Yeah. That Returnal game and Dark Souls.
Yep. There's, it's not necessarily
Demon Souls, I think.
Demon Souls.
Oh my gosh.
I want to know what that was.
I think it was the Sonos.
No, I bumped the Sonos and I knocked over the little speaker. These are things I'm talking about later. Foreshadowing, sorry, Pat.
It's just a blue smear on my screen. I can't see what it is.
All I really was gonna say was that it's still a machine that makes last gen games look better, play better, load faster. There aren't really any killer, like you need to buy this console to play this game sort of titles. That's not a thing that's existed yet. That was one of my key criticisms when it came out. Fast forward to now, that really hasn't changed. There's games that look stellar, like Assassin's Creed Valhalla looks really, really good. Still one of the best looking games on the console. Sea of Thieves, cartoony art style, but it looks really, really good on the Series X. Gears 5, it's like 2 years old now. Probably the, like, no argument, best looking game on the Series X, hands down. So that, like, it does improve the experience. But if you're like, back in the day, the reason to buy a new console is always to have that new fancy, shiny new game, right? That's not a thing. For me, personally, because I'm not really into a lot of the PlayStation 5 exclusives, it's the same thing on that console, right? You're going to get the for me anyways, I get that same experience. Yeah. But generally speaking, my opinion about it hasn't changed. There's games coming down the line. Microsoft has all those first-party studios that are working on stuff. Halo Infinite is just a couple months away at this point. It's nearly 100% going to drop in November. I know that's a cross-generational game.
It is, yeah, true, it's cross-generational, but it is for sure 100% going to drop in November, but not 100% of it is going to drop in November.
Yeah, there won't be...
Very good distinction.
Co-op... No co-op and no Forge. I don't care about Forge, but the lack of co-op is disappointing because for years I've played through that game with my friends. So that's That's kind of sad that they weren't able to get that up and running. Sometime we'll probably do like a whole podcast episode about Halo at some point, because I have some opinions about that game, and I hope that someday someone who does like investigative gaming related reporting, like Jason Schreier, does some sort of an investigation into that game's development, because it's definitely been tumultuous. It's been a long time. But generally speaking, I like the console. If you can get your hands on one, you're going to be happy with it. Yeah.
But you like it? I have lots of questions. You like it a lot. And I'm sure lots of people do love it. I mean, all my friends that have them are like, why don't you get an Xbox? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. But like, to me, it seems like legitimately realistically, they're hard to get, yes, but there really is no reason to get one. Like, Halo's coming in last gen. Halo's coming to PC. Most of the games are until like Forza Horizon 5. Is that the only true next gen one? Although it doesn't really look that next gen to me. But like, other than that, I don't know. It's like $600, and I just haven't been given like a really big reason to get one.
No, yeah, that's the issue.
Even with Game Pass getting better and like more cloud streamy, is like even taking away a reason to get one.
Yeah, John, go ahead.
I just wanted to say I wanted to jump on this question too, because to me it does seem like there's a huge value argument there with Game Pass. The lower cost of a Series X or even a Series S compared to a PC. And I think there's a program, I don't know if it's in Canada, but there's a program where you can like basically pay a monthly fee for your console and your Game Pass. And so you don't even have to buy it outright. You can just like more or less subscription your Xbox from Microsoft.
Yeah, that's what my brother wants to do. And that was in stock for quite some time. And now that's not even in stock anymore.
Yeah,
but you guys are right. There is.
I just feel like any game
to justify the purchase at this point.
Like, unless you, like, it's not if you're a real gamer, because like we all can sit here and no one's going to deny that like games are going to come out for it and like things are going to be worth it and the games are going to be played and they're going to start being worse on Xbox One and all that stuff is going to start happening. It just hasn't happened yet, and you know what I mean. Like, I don't know, just the Xbox One, like I still have it. I have my PC in between the two of them. I haven't really missed out on any games. And even that really fast loading time stuff is coming to PCs in Windows 11. You will need specific hardware for it, which NVMe. Is going to be not for everyone. Yeah, NVMe storage. But, you know, it's not like those are out of reach for everyone anymore, I guess, or will be. I don't know. Yeah. I like the new consoles. I'm just not like really sold on them. And like, it's kind of leading me down this line of like, is this the last console generation?
No, everybody says that. You've heard that like a million times at this point. People are saying that back with the Xbox 360 and when the Xbox One was coming out. I think there's always going to be some sort of physical hardware. But I do hear what you guys are saying. And that's the main criticism of the Series X, is the simple fact that there's not like you need the console to play this game. That's not a thing that exists. And I think that that's increasingly where the industry is moving away from, especially Microsoft, where you can play stuff over Xbox game streaming. That's like a huge thing. You can play things on PC, especially the first party games like Halo Infinite. It's gonna be on PC, right? So I think that this generation of consoles is very different. I do think that we will see games that are worthwhile buying the machine for to play them, but those games will also be available on PC, right? So that'll be another option for a lot of people.
Yeah, the one thing I've kind of noticed is definitely Microsoft more than Sony seems to be going on this trend of it's more about the games and making the games available to play, because that's where Microsoft makes its money, right? Like, it sells the Xbox either at cost or at a loss so that people have the hardware to play the games, and then that's where Microsoft makes its money back, is on game sales. And so, you know, I definitely don't think this is going to be the last console generation, but I definitely see a pattern where this might be the last traditional console generation where you buy a big box that you plug into your TV. Like, the next console might be more like a Chromecast.
Yo, for sure. That's right.
You just, you know, stick that into your TV or you stick it into your monitor and you just stream your games. You don't even, you know.
So they're working on something like that too, that links to Game Pass, X Cloud or Xbox game streaming, whatever you want to call it at this point.
The one question I had for you, Pat, is I think the new Xboxes have support for keyboard and mouse, and I just wanted to know if you've tried that at all and what your experience has been. Because, you know, for me as a PC gamer, the biggest thing actually is keyboard and mouse. Like, I hate playing console games now because the controller just feels awful to me compared to keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, I've never tried it because I'm on the other end of the spectrum, right? We've talked about this off the podcast. Like, using a mouse and keyboard to play something like a shooter just feels so incredibly foreign to me. Like, I would in some ways have to like relearn how I play games from the ground up to be able to do it. That said, I do know people that played the Halo Infinite technical preview, which I wrote about. It's up on the site. They played it with a mouse and keyboard through the Xbox. I believe that was something that was possible. And they said that the experience was generally pretty solid. There's some weirdness with Halo, I think, because I believe the game's still built from the ground up for controllers. So there's like some strangeness with like the auto aim that comes along with controllers, and then you don't have that anymore when you're using a mouse and keyboard because you have the added accuracy. So there's like, there's some, I forgot what people described it, like some weirdness just with the aiming that I think will end up getting tweaked out. But generally, I've heard positive things. Like, I know people that play Sea of Thieves on the Xbox Series X with a mouse and keyboard. It's not something that I would ever do because that's part of why I don't play games on PC, right? I grew up using a controller. That's what I do. It's too late for me to switch at this point. And I don't really want to because that's what I'm comfortable with, right?
Yeah. Oh, that led me to a question. Oh, I was just going to say, the keyboard and mouse support seems to be pretty robust across the Master Chief Collection PC. So I would expect that Halo Infinite will launch with like to please PC players as well.
Yeah, I'm glad they're doing it, but I'm also very curious. Like, I don't know what Halo is going to look like cross-platform with some people on PC and some people on gamepad. Like, are those two experiences, like, are you going to be playing against people with PC automatically? Is that something you're going to have to opt into in like a game like Apex? It's going to be really, really different.
In the Master Chief Collection, I think it just bases who you're playing against on by what controller. So like, if I play a controller plugged into PC, I'm playing with console people, I think. But sometimes there would be a mix. Depends on what your lobby could get.
So the other thing that I wanted to mention, and because I monopolized so much time with the conversation about the Series X, we'll go through this really relatively quickly. The other device that I reviewed was the iPhone 12, particularly the Mini. When it came out, I felt that it was too small. 5.24 inches was way too small for me. Since getting my hands on the purple version of it, it's really grown on me. I think the color was what kind of made me want to give it more of a chance. I appreciate the size. It's nice that I can just like slide it into my pockets and it doesn't feel like there's like a weight in there. It's really nice. It has all of the features that I generally care about. I know it doesn't have all of the camera fanciness, but overall it has like pretty much everything you need. And then the other thing that I was going to say is I know there's been a lot of criticism surrounding the battery life. I don't think it's been quite as bad as like some people made it out to be. I still get through a full day with it and then some if I need to, like if I don't have the opportunity to charge it overnight. But you do notice that the battery is dropping a little bit quicker than you would with a normal iPhone. So in terms of that review, my opinion has changed quite a bit. I originally wouldn't recommend it to anyone unless you like really wanted a small phone. And now I think anyone could get it as long as they're okay with the tinier screen. You're not really missing out much.
Would you say, like, does a small screen have any sort of impact on usability? Like, it just seems, you know, most phones have like a 5 to 6 inch screen now, and that's what people are used to. And the Mini just feels so much smaller. Does it feel like harder to use because of that?
It does. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Depending on what you're trying to do with the phone, it does get like, it depends on the size of your hands, right? Like, I don't think I have necessarily big hands, but when I'm trying to do certain things, like even typing, right? Like sometimes I'll make more mistakes just because the screen is smaller. So that is something.
You would get used to it, would you not?
Yeah. When I was on vacation, I actually used the Mini the entire time just as a little bit of an experiment. I may write about it at some point if I have the time, but
yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. That finding the time will be the difficult part. But yeah, so like I know everybody else needs to go through their devices, and John, you have to take off relatively soon.
Let John go next.
Yeah, John, do you want to go next? And then if you need to take off, you can 100%. We'll just stop for a second and you can take off.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. All right, so I kind of have two and then an honorable mention. So the first one I wanted to talk about was the Pixel 4a 5G slash 4a. Because they're very, very similar phones. I think that these phones were, when I reviewed them, I really liked them. I still think that they're excellent options if you can find one. The future of both of the phones seems kind of uncertain right now because Google has them listed as out of stock on its store. And I know in the US, with the Pixel 5a coming out, they've basically scrapped all of their Pixel phones. So I don't know if that change has come to Canada yet, officially or unofficially, but...
I hope not.
I really hope not, because there's no 5a here. So basically that means that the only budget Pixel option you have is the 4a 5G or the 4a. And yeah, I don't know. They were just both really great phones. And a little bit has changed in my time since reviewing the 4a 5G in October. It still has fantastic battery life. 5G in Canada has expanded. So there's 5G in more areas. It's still not great 5G. Like, there's not a huge difference in my experience between the 5G and the 4G that's available in Canada in most places. But for the 4A 5G being a budget device, that's like $650 in that range in Canada. I don't remember the exact price, but you know, getting something that's future-proofed with 5G access. So as 5G continues to roll out down the road, you're going to have that access is really good. Still a great camera, even though Google's camera tech is starting to show its age. Just all around a really generally great device. And then on the 4A, no 5G access, but it's a really awesome small phone. And for both of them, I've been running the Android 12 beta on both devices, and it feels really, really solid. There's still some hiccups, and it's not quite as smooth as on some of the flagship Pixels, but it is a beta software, so I think that Google's still probably working out some of the kinks. But just all around, I think they're great devices for the cost and just a lot of value there.
My question is...
Go ahead. You can ask first.
Thanks. My question is, how do the chips, in both phones, sort of held up over... it's been, what, roughly a year for the 4A, almost a year for the 4A 5G, or, you know, 10 months? So how have the chips held up over that time? Do they still feel relatively snappy? Because they're both low and mid-range chips, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, they're both low mid-range chips. The 4A 5G is the 765G, I believe, if I remember correctly. And that's what's the Pixel 5. So it's the same chip there. The Pixel 4A is the 730, the Snapdragon 730, if I remember correctly. Like I said, both phones still feel relatively snappy. I do notice a difference. If I take the 4A 5G next to the Pixel 4, I don't have a Pixel 5 to do a comparison with, but the Pixel 4 was the last Pixel phone with an 800 series flagship Snapdragon chip. So side by side comparison, I would say that apps open, you know, maybe a fraction of a second faster on the Pixel 4 compared to the 4A 5G or the 4A, but the difference is fairly negligible. And
yeah, I think the bigger question is less how it compares to older Pixel phones, but more just how it uses in isolation. I think the bigger thing people worried about is when they came out with these lower end chips, it was like, will they last long into the future? And now here we are a year later. Do you feel them still usable devices, or do you feel like they're laggy and starting to show their age faster than a flagship would?
No, I would say that they're still very, very usable. It's hard to say precisely because, like I said, I've been running the Android 12 beta.
Yeah,
on both of them, and that definitely has had a performance impact. I've noticed Android 12 is a little bit, you know, rougher, but it's still definitely usable. And aside from the odd kind of glitchiness with Android 12, like, they're still great devices and they work fine.
All right. Do you want to tell us about the Fitbit Sense next, John?
Yeah, so that was the other one I reviewed sometime in 2020, September, I think. Or August, one of those two. At the time when I reviewed it, I was like, the smartwatch itself is fine. It's not super crazy. It's a nice watch. But the app and the software was kind of not great in my eyes. It was glitchy, and I had some issues with it. now almost a year down the line, the Fitbit Sense itself, I actually really enjoy wearing. I love the watch. It, okay. It's smooth. It works great. Google Assistant is nice to have. When I use it now and then, I don't use it a lot.
No, that's cool. That, like when your hands are full, you need to start a timer or something. That's that's sick.
Yeah, it's super handy. The Fitbit app, I think, has also gotten better. I still don't like it. Like of the Fitbit or not, sorry, of the fitness apps that I've tried, you know, Google Fit, the Withings HealthMate / Nokia HealthMate, whatever that is now, because it keeps swapping hands.
Yeah, you're right.
I own it. Even Apple's health app, they all feel like better apps. Like the Fitbit app feels very, what's the word? Just janky and not great. But even, you know, I've kind of gotten used to it. So aside from the Fitbit app, like everything else with the watch is great and I really enjoy using it. And I'm very interested to see what Fitbit does next with the Google acquisition and the changes to Wear OS. I'm kind of excited. I'm hoping that Fitbit announces like a Fitbit Sense 2 in the future. That's basically this watch, but with Wear OS.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happens either.
I actually saw a Sense for the first time probably a couple of weeks ago. Tasia got one for her, well, her family got one for her mom for her birthday. And I was surprised at how premium it feels. Like it feels like an Apple Watch. Like,
yeah, it feels really, really
nice. It was really nice looking. The one question that I had about it, and I did like some Googling because her mom was actually a little curious about this. Is it possible to connect Bluetooth headphones to it and stream music to it or put like actual downloaded songs onto it? Or is that not something that the Sense is capable of?
I think so, but I'm honestly not sure. That's a feature that I've never used and I don't think I ever will. I know that I can control Spotify, like the Spotify playing controls on the watch. So if I'm listening to Spotify on my phone, I can pause, play, skip whatever from the watch.
I know you can do that. I'm pretty sure, like, I only researched for, like, I don't know, 5 minutes or something like that. But I don't think you can connect Bluetooth headphones to it.
Yep, you can.
You can. Okay, you can. Cool.
To the Sense?
Yeah, the Sense. Yeah.
You can connect Bluetooth devices. How do I change Bluetooth audio? Yeah, Sense is here. It seems to be available.
Okay, cool. Because that was one of the glaring things that I for a device that costs that much money, that otherwise is like seems to me to be 100% on par with the Apple Watch in terms of functionality, that was the one glaring thing that was missing. So it's cool to see that it's actually there, and I just couldn't figure out how to do it.
Yeah, well, it may be missing. Like, they might not have Apple Music or Spotify integration as well as Apple Watch does. But from my research here quickly, it does seem like you can connect Bluetooth headphones. That's as far as I'll say that I was able to see.
Cool. So, John, I think you have to take off. So this is a great time for us to hit an ad break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so John is gone. He is learning about top secret stuff that we can't talk about. He's in a briefing about things and stuff.
We wouldn't tell it to you guys anyway. So deal with that.
So the last person on this list that needs to talk about the devices that they're taking a second look at is none other than Bennett. I believe he has it in his hands. I can't really tell what it is because it just looks four pixels. I know we keep mentioning that and we haven't even explained it on the podcast. For whatever reason, the platform that we use, Zencastr, to do these remote podcasts, it doesn't like Bennett's camera and it turns him into like a video game. So it just looks like I'm talking to some pixels on the screen right now. I think he's got a speaker in his hands, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I do. This is actually a good exercise for me because it's like stress the audio. This is a podcast. In my hands here, I'm holding a UE Wonderboom 2. I've got a blue one with green buttons, not that really matters. And I'm also holding a Sonos Move, which neither of these things actually came out in the last year, but my
you reviewed them in the past year.
Nope. A little bit before that. But my opinions on them in the last year have changed considerably. Like, now that I've had a lot of time specifically with this Sonos Move, I'm in love with it. When it first came out, it's like a $500 speaker. And it was one of my first interactions with Sonos. And I was like, I know the reputation. It does sound really amazing. Like, if you have Sonos and you want one that will move a little bit, like, yeah, get this speaker. It sounds like it really does. It sounds better than a Sonos One. It is like, the reason I love it so much is because it simply sounds better than any other portable speaker I've ever used. It's huge. You sacrifice a lot because it's so huge, but it does sound so good. That's why the UE Wonder Room is here too. It's like to make up for when you need like a little portable guy. The UE Wonder Room 2 is like a $100 speaker that you just can like clip onto your pants or your backpack and just have with you for situations where the Sonos Move is too big. But the Sonos Move, it was $500, and I used to not recommend it to people because of that. And I was like, this is too expensive. A speaker isn't worth that. But now I've had it for, you know, over a year, and I literally use it every day. It's just my main speaker that I use. It has a dock. It sits on its own dock, so it's always charged. You can play through Spotify Connect or AirPlay or the Sonos app. You just stream music to it within your house. You want to go outside or go to a park, you can just pick it up, bring it with you, bring it, you know, if you're driving somewhere, and you can bring lots of gear, you can bring a big speaker and really blow people away with like top quality audio. I mean, it's like waterproof. The battery is replaceable. So after a few years, if the battery life is starting to get really bad, you could replace it and have it for a few more years, which I will probably do because, like I said, I legitimately use this every single day. I don't know how else to describe it. It's like that good.
The one question I have about it is it's designed to, just correct me if I'm wrong, it's designed to be used as a portable speaker within your home, right?
Yeah, that's sort of like the main design because it's so big and has that like dock. So as long as it's connected to Wi-Fi, you can stream music to it without even using Bluetooth, like using Spotify Connect or AirPlay, like I was talking about, or the Sonos app. So, you know, on your back porch, moving it around your house, maybe your like neighborhood, if you were like really close to your neighbors or something. That being said, I still do bring it places with me because it just sounds so good. And it's also very clear at low volumes, which is nice. So even if you're not using it to its full potential, it still will like push and carry that sound with nicely throughout a room.
But this isn't something I could like take camping or whatever, right? Like, that's not the idea. It's like an in-home portable speaker that, like, if I'm chilling in my backyard, I can take it there and like put on my porch or something.
Yeah, so that's sort of where it kind of becomes how much do you like music and how much you like carrying giant things. If I was going car camping, as someone who really likes music and playing music and just having good music, I think I would now bring this. Like, originally I wouldn't have because it's so big. If I was going like canoe camping or backpacking or something, that's where the Wonder Boom comes in handy. It's waterproof, it floats, it's super light. It does sound decent, but like this Sonos Move is 10 times the speaker that the Wonder Boom is. The Wonder Boom is like a passable speaker when you're hanging out with your buds at the beach or whatever, you know, it's gonna work, you're gonna get used to it. But like, you really want good high quality music, this thing is worth it. I don't know. You have a Sonos One, and I feel like we've talked before. You said you use it a lot because it simply sounds.
If I want to listen to music, like I have, so I used to live in a world where I had Alexa devices and Google Home devices. I don't really have any Alexa devices other than one near my door to use with my Ring doorbell, so it makes a noise now. Cool. I've switched mostly to Google Home. I have a couple Nest audios, one in my bathroom, one in my bedroom. A bunch of what's the Nest with the camera, the smaller one?
The Nest Hub?
Yes, Nest Hub. I have two Nest Hubs in different areas of my home. And so like what I'm setting up here is like I've used a lot of different smart speakers over the years. I think beyond you at the site, like we both review most the majority of them. And this
Sonos One. Yeah, you've got me because you've done some Apple ones.
Oh yeah, that's true. I did do the now defunct HomePod. What's the Apple speaker called again? It's too early.
The HomePod.
In the morning. The HomePod, yeah. HomePod. The first gen HomePod and the HomePod Mini, which sounds shockingly good for such a tiny device. But yes, the point I'm making here is the Sonos One, two Sonos Ones paired for stereo speakers, which I think costs roughly $500 at this point, is by far still the best. Like, if I want to listen to music, which is usually if I'm working in the office or playing games in the office, that's where I go. I mostly use the other speakers for listening to podcasts, or like if I want, if someone's over and I want to be like, listen to the 12 speakers I have around my house, and then I make music play through them. But generally speaking, the Sonos ones in my office, just around my desk, that's my like key area for listening to music, and they sound way better than anything else that I own.
Yeah, I my whole house is outfitted like that, smart speakers, but also in Sonos. Like, there's literally a Sonos in every room.
Oh, nice.
Every room I go into, I could turn on a Sonos and use it. But you know what's easier than turning on a Sonos and using it? Just picking up the speaker that's already playing music and just carrying it to whatever room you're going to, and then carrying it back if you have to. Which is like the whole problem Sonos is trying to solve with its entire system. But I use this giant Sonos Move. I'm holding the Sonos Move right now. I use the giant Sonos Move just as a portable speaker. Like, I'll literally put music on it, and I'll just carry it to the living room, carry it outside, carry it to the bathroom. I'm going to have a shower. Like, I don't know. Like, the hassle of having to, like, go find my phone, go through, connect different speakers. Sometimes AirPlay doesn't quite work, so you're going in. Spotify Connect can't do multi-rooms. You got to go then into the Sonos app. Like, those things are supposed to make it, yeah, exactly. It's supposed to make it more convenient, actually end up making it more complicated, and it's just easier. This one's already playing music because I put a song on it earlier. Let's pick it up, take it into the kitchen, make my lunch, bring it back. It just works out. It ends up being the most convenient that way. I don't know. It's like hard to sell a $500 speaker. I'm glad we started this on the podcast, but like, it really is so, so good. And I think, even like when I first wrote the review, I was like, if you have Sonos and you want to like expand your Sonos system, maybe get this, because then you can take it outside or take it to the beach and then still use it as a Sonos. And my perspective has now changed, which is kind of why I wanted to do this, is like, if you want to start with Sonos, start with this. You could start with the $200 Roam, which is a smaller portable speaker, but the Roam isn't that good. To be honest, I would just buy the Wonder Boom because at least it floats.
What's the price difference
between the Roam and the Wonder Boom?
Yeah.
I think the Roam is like $218, and then this is like $130, but you get them both down to like $200 or $100 on sale all the time.
Okay.
So about $100 in between them. And I would say just get the Wonder Boom for those like situations, and then get the Move for like, if you really care about music quality, no other speaker except for this portable guy is really going to get you where you need to go. I think that's all I can say. And if you're going to start a Sonos ecosystem, this is a good place to start, because you get a super great speaker. Yeah, you're paying a lot for it, but B, you can then take it everywhere with you, and it kind of like negates the need to really start expanding your Sonos system right off the bat. Like, maybe you'll get a soundbar down the line or something else, but like, this will cover everything and gives you that same like Sonos sound quality that you've come to expect, and ease of use, other than like kind of the misconvenience thing when you're trying to move music around too much. Anyway, that's it for speaker talk. I don't know, do you have any other questions about it? Does it seem like a crazy combo? It's like, I'm basically telling people, get a $600 combo, which is a one $500 speaker that's going to hopefully last you. In my mind, I'm hoping it's going to last like 9 to 10 years. The speaker shouldn't be pushed that hard. You can replace the battery, and then a cheaper $100 speaker. Ideally, something rugged. I mean, I elbowed this off my table earlier. Hopefully, it still works. I'm betting that it does. Waterproof, it floats. I've thrown this, dropped this, watched this roll away in just really precarious situations. Always fine, and plays music when you need it. So that's sort of Brad's speaker combo recommendation that I've been sitting on for a long time.
All right, hit us with the Fujifilm X-T3 quickly.
So this one I didn't review because we don't really review cameras, but I did get it within a year. So it does have, this one does fall into the distinction of that. A lot of the things I've reviewed lately, I don't have much changed opinions on them. But yeah, the Fujifilm X-T3, it's a camera I recently got. I also got an XS10, my girlfriend did, but it's in our house. So I play with it a lot. And I just like love them. I think I've been trying to convince my other friends to get into cameras more, and I think Fujifilm is the way to go mirrorless wise. I know you're an Olympus guy and John is a Sony guy, but I just from using them, I just love the pictures that come out, even non in RAWs. Like, the JPEGs themselves just have such nice colors that sometimes it's too much fun to like
shoot. Me, so I primarily, well, I've for the last 5 years been using a Panasonic Lumix G85. I think for me it was mostly just like that's what I'm comfortable with now, right? I could switch to another camera relatively easily as long as I could still use my very expensive lenses.
Right.
I'm not like against going with a different brand, and I'm probably due for a camera upgrade at some point, either this year or the year after. I typically get a new one roughly every 5 years or so. But yeah, I guess my one question is like, what why do you like this camera? Because you've used a couple now, right? Why do you like this camera more than other very similar price competing cameras?
I guess I should say the X-T3. So the X-T3 was Fuji's like top of the line camera a few years ago. It's been replaced now by the X-T4, which this is where the key factor comes in. When that happened, they lowered the price of the X-T3 to around $1,000, $1,300 in Canada, which is just like a really, really, really sweet spot for that camera in terms of like performance. So 10-bit color, like decently, you know, about half an hour or more of high quality, like 4K recording, 240 frames per second slow-mo and 1080p. The photos are just really, really fantastic. I bought like I bought a really expensive lens to go with this one, which on my old camera I hadn't really invested in lenses. And like that has made a huge difference for me and just like my photography in general. I don't know how much like readers actually notice the photography on the site, but I put a lot of effort into it. And I think that over the 3 years that I've worked here, I've really like grown considerably. I think most people probably don't know, but I never picked up a real camera before I started working here. And then I just like, this job just like opened up this like love of photography inside of me. And it's been like really growing a lot over the past 3 years to this point where I've now invested a few $1,000s into a real camera. And I've been learning to use it through just taking photos for work and doing video for work. And over time I've been getting like way better with it. And like, I don't know, I'm just like really enjoying the satisfaction of having like a new tool that is very powerful, but I didn't quite understand. And it's slowly like revealing itself to me as I slowly start to understand more about it and all these convoluted settings. And it's just like a tech experience that I haven't had in a long time, I think. So when we were younger, I'm just sort of like generalizing because I imagine you felt the same way, but you would get something and it would be like huge. You'd be like, oh my God, I just got this new tech item. I'm going to like play with it. It's going to be my life. I'm going to discover every single thing about it. I'm going to be reading down the forums. I'm going to be doing this, that, and the other thing. It's just, this tech item will become my life for the next little bit. And ever since I started working here, that happens a little less, A, because you're reviewing tech items. You don't necessarily have that like just unabashed love for them because you didn't spend hours researching and watching your own, like watching reviews and doing all this like stuff on your own to sort of buy it and force yourself to fall in love with it. You're using tech more as a job. And this camera has been the thing, I think more recently, that's like awakened that little like tech passion in me and allowed me to play in the tech space more as a hobby and less as a job lately. And I think that's the part that's like really I've been enjoying the most.
I think that's the, with photography and mobile syrup, like one of the things I think a lot of readers don't realize, especially when they shed all over a Facebook post that has like one tiny spelling error in it or something like that, is that we're like, like six people, right? You know what
seven
I mean?
Seven now
like
with Alyssa.
Yes. Sorry. Seven now. I think people think that this is like a massive website
Verge
with like
size
20
site,
people.
Yeah.
One of the things I love is like, you guys should fire a social media editor. And my thought when I see that all the time is like, I wish we had one so that we
could. You want me to fire myself? Yeah.
We could fire them. It's like, I post all of that stuff to social media for the most part with some help from other members of the team. But back to what I was saying, the photography and even the video side, which you do way more of, that for
you
us.
You did a lot though back in the day.
In
I've
the beginning.
Some of your older stuff, and you were really heavy into it back then.
Couple years ago, but my role has changed drastically since then.
Yeah, definitely.
But I had photography experience before I worked here. I was lucky enough to go to a high school that had like a film photography program. I'm not that old. Like, it was dated at the time. Like, the world had moved on to digital, but they
even my high school had that. I didn't take it, but they did have it. Yeah,
they still taught film because it like teaches you a lot of the fundamentals and it's stuff that I still use today. I've always had an interest in photography. Both my brothers are like photographers. My brother has like a small portrait studio that he does professional photography in. So like, I've always had an interest, but before I started working here, I would mostly do like landscape photography, that sort of thing. What we do here, specifically taking pictures of devices, people might think is really easy. It's not. Like, to make a phone look interesting in a picture is extremely difficult. I know it's not the same as like working with a live subject, but there's different things that go into it. And it's been fascinating over the last 6 years. You like pick up little things. We like, one of us learns something and then hands it off to somebody else. And eventually you start to see the overall photography quality. What did you drop? What is that?
I just dropped my, I kicked over my can of coffee that I was drinking earlier, but this is my bin of props for like photos of the site. One of the many, just like random, like so much stuff has to go into this.
So it's stuff like that where like we've all learned over the years, we've all gotten way better. You can see like, if I go back and look at photos from when I started at Mobile Syrup, there's like an Apple TV review, fourth gen Apple TV. And it's just like, the whole thing is like straight up covered in dust and I can't look at those pictures. They like make me so sad. But then I look at stuff that I did more recently and it's things that I'm far more happy with, like my iPhone 12 pictures from last year. So
even your new Apple TV review, the photos are really great. Like the levels of like the level between the lighting in the room and the lighting of the TV is like really, really awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. You learn stuff over the years and you figure it out. And I do think like there's a lot of people out there that think that, like DSLR, whether it's mirrorless or mirrored or whatever is going away. And I don't think that's true. I think that photography will always be around. Like I know my iPhone can take decent photos. Karan, great example. Actually, no, he is using a DSLR now, right?
He's using my old Canon EOS M5, but the the Dyson V11 review was all iPhone shots, I believe.
And they looked great, right?
Yeah,
and
they were super good.
That's something that like I never would have thought that I would be saying 5 years ago. Like you could probably take those pictures and like, yeah, because we know a little bit about photography, we could pick out things like noise or like oversaturation of like the highlights and stuff like that that we would see in a photo shot with a phone. But so for the average person, they probably wouldn't even notice at this point, right?
Man, there are even times where I'm like out taking photos and if it's just a little too bright or the sky's too harsh, you'll just be like taking a photo with your mirrorless or something, and then I'll be like, and I rarely do this, but sometimes I'll be like, should I just take it with my iPhone? Because then at least I'll get like a really great HDR shot of whatever the, you know, sky's going to be exposed correctly. Faces are going to be exposed correctly. And like stuff like that really is exciting for mobile photography. But yeah, like you said, there's a sort of a lack of depth and detail. Just how much you can like, people probably don't realize how much we can actually crop into our photos. Like
things. Yeah, there's way more too.
Yeah.
That said, I do kind of buy into the best camera you have is the one that's on you at all times sort of philosophy now. Like I did a lot of just for fun photography when I was on vacation last week. Like I'm sailing, taking pictures of lighthouses and stuff. And I did that with my phone because that's the thing that I had on me. And I actually like took those photos and did stuff that I would normally do with something that I shot with a DSLR in Lightroom. And I was shocked at how good they looked, because that's not something I normally do.
Mm-hmm. I think that was just the last thing
I wanted to mention.
Did you miss your camera? I find whenever, the best for camera is obviously what you have on you, and I'll take photos of my phone, no problem. But every time I do, like if I get somewhere or if I'm like driving, I'm like, oh my God, that's a really amazing shot. I need to pull over, and I don't have my camera. I'll just be like, is it even worth it? Sometimes, like I fall on both sides. I get what you're saying, but ever like in the last 6 months or so since lockdown sort of eased up when I started getting out more and Alex was getting a little more in photography too, I've been walking around like just always having my camera on me, always having my camera on me. And now when I don't, I'm like so sad, because it's like I know I could have been taking like the most baller picture. I could be cropping in like the angles, like everything how like perfect how I want it, and then I'll be like, but I only have my phone. And I get
maybe it's just what I was shooting at the time in those couple of days, or just doing photography for fun, which is something I haven't done in quite some time. Yeah. I didn't miss it. I was just like happy to not have my big bulky, it's not big, it's like it's a Micro Four Thirds, but I was happy to not have a backpack on, just have my phone in my pocket and be able to like move quickly, bust it out, take the picture I need and keep moving on. But I think it depends on the type of photography I was doing, right? Like if I was trying to take a sunset or like like some sort of spanning vista or something like that, I would be like, oh shit, I wish I had my actual camera. But no, just the stuff I was playing around with when I was on vacation, I didn't surprisingly get that vibe.
This is one thing, and I'm not even sure where I'm going to be able to go with this. There's just something, this idea that I haven't been able to crystallize, but I've been kind of like sitting on for a while. So one of my buddies the other day, maybe like 3 or 4 months ago, at the beginning of the summer, really wanted to get a camera. And he was like, I want to get a camera. I want to get a DSLR, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, like maybe if you've never really done photography before, I would look into a mirrorless. It's a little easier to compose your shots. You can kind of see it's a little bit of a cross between a DSLR and a phone camera, like software wise. So it becomes a little easier. Anyway, he gets one, he gets into it. But he's having a lot of issues like sticking with it because he just doesn't have excuses to take photos very often.
Interesting.
Which is fair because, like, for us, at least for me, I could take easily one, maybe two photos every single day for just stories that go up on Mobile Syrup. If I'm doing a review, I'll be taking five or six, like, obviously hundreds, but, like, editing five or six photos. You know, in my job, I get to take a lot of photos, and it's led to me developing a love for photography. And I worry about, now that I've recommended this guy this camera and he doesn't really use it because he doesn't have this, like, same inlet to photography. He just has his phone, and that's enough for most situations. I'm, like, kind of curious about the future of photography on, like, a more casual sense.
I think you have to, like, be going somewhere, right? Like, you almost have to have a purpose and an intent to take pictures at that location to, at least in my mind, right? Like,
but when you're not used to it, it's a bit embarrassing to pull out a big camera and take pictures of, like, random stuff. If you're in, like, a tourist spot, it's easier. But, like, yeah, if you're just, like, walking downtown, you're, like, point a camera at, like, a random reflection.
That's true. That's a fair point.
Weird. Yeah. I don't know. It's tough. I've been thinking about that a lot because I felt guilty. I'm like, maybe I should have just told him to get a really cheap DSLR or something, because maybe that would have been a better inlet.
That's an interesting point. I've never thought of it that way before.
Yeah, it's just, like, as a casual shooter, your phone can be super casual. So getting a big camera to be a casual shooter with, harder sell, I guess, in 2021. Anyway, yeah, that's it. Those are my sort of favorite tech that I've sort of reevaluated my thoughts on over the last bit. And get a Sonos Move, guys, if you really want great great speakers. And I know it's super expensive. But if you're going to treat yourself to a gadget, I think it's something that you will get and you will truly be happy with. That's all I got.
Cool. Let's talk about the games we've been playing. So I know we've run long, so I'll keep it short. I've been playing Assassin's Creed 4. I wanted a game with boats and pirates, and there's really
four
no...
Four is Black Flag.
Black Flag, yeah, Black Flag.
Yeah.
There's never been a better game that features those characteristics. Right. I bought it for the Switch, so I've been playing it, like, on the go. I was playing it at my parents' place. I was playing it in the car on the way to Quebec. I was, like, been playing it all over, probably about 10 hours into the experience at this point, and I would say that it's aged surprisingly well, and at times it doesn't even look that ugly for a game that right now is, like, 7 years old.
How's the combat feel?
So I've never really liked Assassin's Creed's, like, combat. I to some extent kind of like what they did with 4, because you feel more powerful. You're able to just, like, stabby all over the place and take out, like, 10 guys in just, like, a couple seconds, whereas now in Assassin's Creed,
I was gonna say, I have a recording of my Xbox from when the game first came out. It's like a circle of dudes around me, and it's just like, shoo,
shoo. Yeah,
for the audio listeners, I'm just standing in a circle spinning around, slowly stabbing people.
It's, like, it's different. Like, the way it works now in the games is, like, it's more, I don't want to say, like, Dark Souls, like, because it's a totally different game, but it's based on timing and
dodging.
Like, dodging, precise button presses, rolling. Like, this was more, like, button mashy to some extent. And having played that series for since the beginning, pretty much, I appreciate kind of, like, the throwback to that. But yeah, the ship combat is what I'm there for. Like, the upgrading your ship. All of the upgrades feel super meaningful. The plot line is, like, it's one of the first games to ditch all the animus crap that some people really, really care about, but a lot of people don't care about, like myself. So that was cool. The plot's, like, very straightforward, easy to understand. There's a lot to like about
it. Great location. I love games set in, like, tropical locales
Nice. It's so nice.
Far Cry 3. And I actually, I mean, technically under embargo, but I recently went on hands-on with a game that rhymes with Marsai Ticks, and it's also in a very tropical location and really, really great. That was my favorite part about it. It reminded me a lot of Assassin's Creed 4 and Far Cry 3. So
you'll see that on the site somewhat soon as well, I think.
End of the month, yeah.
But yeah, it's been fun. I don't know if I'll go through it all the way. It was on sale, kind of an impulse purchase by me.
I had a longer one too, if I remember.
No, it compared to the actual, like, the new Assassin's Creeds that are, like, 80 hours, 60 hours, the story, the main story is only 25 hours in this one. So possible I may finish it, but who knows? But yeah, what have you been playing?
Nothing. I don't know, man. I honestly, It's a tough segment for you. I haven't even like gamed or like really watched anything lately. Alex and I are watching Ted Lasso season 2, which I hate still hate. Alex used to hate it too, but now she's in and she was like tearing up the other day when there's a point where Ted Lasso's on the phone with his wife and she's just really, really tired of him. And it's sad. And we were feeling it. But yeah, honestly, no games. Like ever since I sort of started this, like just this video project this summer, like all my time is just devoted to like either trying to work on videos, think about videos, or watching videos about making videos. And that's like just where I'm at.
And that stuff should be on the site somewhat soon, early September likely. And you may see some of it a little bit before the official launch as well.
Yeah, I don't know if you'll see anything with me in it before the official launch, but there's a video that we did, just a quick one, just to kind of shake off some rust of Dean. We've got the camera comparison of the Galaxy Z Flip that's up now. If you want to check it out and be like, oh, like they're doing videos again. Are they better than they were last year when I was doing videos? You can be the judge of that. There's the Flip one.
They're better.
And there's a Flip review going up as well. Today is a Tuesday for us, and it might actually be going up today. I think Dean's thing is written. It really just depends whenever that goes up. But the
video, he wants me to get it up today. I don't know if it's going to go up today.
Fair enough. But that video will be up.
It'll probably be tomorrow.
That's fine though. Those two videos, the first two, sort of hinting at where we're headed with this. Although I'm trying at least to come up with something that's a little less in the we just do reviews, following the playbook of other tech sites, and really trying to find some ideas for like uniquer tech content that sort of maybe hits adjacent to the tech space, but is still entertaining and not necessarily competing with MKBHD and the Verge and people that are doing things that are maybe a little out of our league. So we'll see. And it should be a fun project, but it's just taking a lot of time. But it's got me really invigorated, which I think is good, and more excited than video games.
The last thing I was going to say about Ted Lasso is people always tell me like you have to give it more of a chance. So I have tried watching it when season 1 first came out, when Apple TV Plus first released, because I do like a lot of the stuff on Apple TV Plus. I then
what
tried
is it that you don't
to,
like about it? What
I'll
what
get to that.
You?
I'm gonna we're like way over, so I'm gonna do this in like 30 seconds.
We're over now. So
I also tried watching it again, season 2. Couldn't get past like the first 3-4 episodes, and then again when I was at
you
my
got
parents'
that
place
far in.
I tried watching it with my dad because he wanted to see it, and I set him up like with family sharing Apple TV Plus through his Samsung TV because he wanted to see it. Yep. Also still hate it. I do not find Ted Lasso as a character endearing. I find him just annoying. I feel bad for him all the time. Sure.
I think that's like, but exactly. That's like part of it, you know. He's
but
just
I
like
don't
some guy who's like.
I guess I just don't want to like watch a show where I just feel sorry for the character all the time. I often just find him annoying. Like, I'm gonna write about it someday, I think, and like articulate why I really dislike that show, because it's one of the few things that has released in the last little bit where like everybody likes it, and I just
It's just really refreshing to watch a show that's like not based on a miss. Well, there's like, you know, whatever the regular, like the stuff that's happening behind the scenes, sort of like keeping the plot pushing forward is whatever, but like, it's not based on a mystery or a murder or sci-fi or like teen drama or like, you know, who am I going to kiss this summer? It's just like regular people just trying their best. And they're in like a really unique situation. Yeah. Like this, like, football coach coaching European football, but like I don't know, it's just really refreshing to watch a show where you're not watching to be like, oh my god, will this make me like cry or hurt or feel something, like will this make me confused or scared? You're just like, I just want to see somebody make somebody else smile, and I want to feel like happy like that too.
I like I that it just doesn't up, I but. Do I do enjoy content like that. It just doesn't do that to me. It just makes me hate Ted Lasso, and then I frown, and then I sit there like grimacing at the TV throughout the whole episode. But we got to wrap this up.
All right, fine. If you haven't seen Ted Lasso and you're thinking that you might be like Pat, just Google Ted Lasso dart scene, watch that scene.
I know the scene you're talking about too.
If you feel nothing, join Pat at his like psycho meetings of people who have no empathy. And if you feel something, enjoy Ted Lasso and reach out to me online.
Oh, I hate that show. That's it. Thanks for listening to the Syrupcast. You can find me on Twitter at Patrick_O'Rourke, and of course on mobilesyrup.com. Bennett, where can people find you?
You can find me online, Instagram, Twitter, at the Brad Fad. Most of my work-related stuff is on Twitter. If you care about my photos at all, that's on Instagram. And then, of course, my work is on mobilesyrup.com and soon to be on Mobile Syrup YouTube as well.
You took some sick like Toronto skyline photos recently, too, which look really good.
Yeah, that's actually for a video, which I don't want to hype up too much. It's probably my favorite video I've made so far. I don't know if it's really something that other people are going to get a lot of entertainment out of. But I basically sat watching the Toronto skyline for an entire day, taking photos every hour on the hour to make a dynamic wallpaper for Mac. That'll be a cool video coming out. But those photos are on my Instagram if you're curious about what the skyline looks like over.
It's a good one. I've seen a cut of it. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It might get cut down a bit. It's a little long. There's a few things I'm thinking don't add exactly what I want to it. So we'll see how it ends up. But yeah, it's a fun one for sure.
And as always, you can find all of our content on mobilesyrup.com and also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at mobilesyrup. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.